all oysters are different, right? Like every wine's different. A wine, the grape grows from a certain growing region. It has a certain characteristics of the soil. And so the same can be said of an oyster. An oyster is a reflection of, immediate reflection of the water body that it was harvested from.
I'm Robin Sessingham, and this is The Zest. Citrus, seafood, Spanish flavor, and Southern charm. We're all about food in Florida. Support for The Zest podcast comes from Seitenbacher brand natural foods like muesli cereals, oils, oatmeal, energy bars, gluten-free fruit gummies for the kids, organic coffee, and more. Available in supermarkets, health food stores, or online at Seitenbacher.com. In the last couple of years, the harvest of wild-caught oysters has gone down by half, but the amount of farmed oysters has doubled in that time, and there's definitely a market demand for the shellfish. So aqua farmers are trying out more areas of Florida to grow oysters outside of Apalachicola, which is where you usually think of oysters growing. Brian Rossiger is one of these pioneering oyster farmers. Last year, he and his wife started their small business, Lost Coast Oysters, in Terracea Aquatic Preserve at the mouth of Tampa Bay. It's a very labor-intensive process. Reporter Jessica Mazzaros recently took a ride with Brian deep into the mangroves as he worked on his floating farm.
What made you want to start farming oysters in the Tampa Bay region?
Well, I wanted to farm oysters at any cost, and I said, well, you know, I'd like to try to do it someplace in like Cedar Key or the Big Bend region where it's more prevalent. And then I did a little bit of research, and I saw that there were people that were growing clams already in Tampa Bay. They've been doing it for 15, 20 years. And so I, you know, if they can grow clams, then I can try to grow oysters. And the real, you know, red tape that had to get moved out of the way was the full water column aquaculture. Prior to this regulatory change, farmers could only use the bottom in 6 inches, and it didn't enable them to do the kind of off-bottom farming that's being done in other places in the country. And so that happened in 2016. And it's experienced a lot of growth in the Gulf region. I mean, there are now well over 100 farms in the state of Florida alone in an industry where there might have been, you know, five several years ago. So it's more of a commentary on the way that we are consuming seafood now. Aquacultured seafood now, as in terms of the global market share, exceeds that of wild catch fisheries. So, you know, there is an agricultural revolution that's happening right now, and it's just happening in the oceans.
And why was it important for you to get to be able to use the full water column versus just the bottom?
I mean, otherwise it's a, you know, places in Massachusetts, for instance, they have these wide, tidal fluctuations, 8-9 feet in a day. So they have exposed mud flats where they can drive tractors out and work their gear at low tide. And then the tide comes in and they feed their animals. We don't have that big tidal range here, and this becomes a very labor-intensive endeavor if you have to go get all your oysters off the bottom every time you come out to your farm. So by farming them at the surface, we're exposing them to more food availability because of there's better sunlight penetration, higher counts of phytoplankton. It also makes it easier for us to farm them and to handle them on a daily basis. And they also get exposed to some, you know, good environmental benefits out here, you know, these waves and wind that kind of tumble and cup the shell to tend to it, make it grow into a deeper, thick cup oyster rather than a long scissor bill.
And are you the only one who is that you know of? Are you the only one who's doing this right now in Tampa Bay with the full water column growing oysters?
I am. We are the only full water column oyster lease in Tampa Bay. I do know that there are some other folks that are going to be going through this process and getting their leases as well. And we're just excited to be part of it, to, you know, be part of this kind of growing community.
You're like a founder.
Yeah, a founder to a certain degree. You know, I can't take all the credit because I'm just doing what's being done in other parts of the state and throughout the country. It's just, it's new to this region.
And you, when we spoke on the phone, you mentioned that clam, people who grow clams here helped you out a lot. How so?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a hatchery that I get all my shellfish from, and it's the Bay Shellfish Company run by a guy named Kurt Hamill. And Kurt Hamill has been in the industry for about 25 years or so. And, you know, he introduced me to, like, you know, a network of people and that are doing clamming in the region. So it's just been a great relationship to have.
And you mentioned that you just knew you had to get into oysters. Why is that? Why is that something that you felt like it was just a part of you that you needed to get done at some point somewhere?
Well, I always wanted to be like a waterman. I wanted to grow up on the water. I mean, I wanted to do something on the water. I went to, you know, I grew up in Lakeland, Florida, on Lake Luther Road. I went to Lake Gibson High School. I was right across the street from Lake Deason. My dad worked for Game and Fish. You know, I needed to do something in the water. And oysters present, like, this unique opportunity to do something really interesting and also give back and kind of, you know, satiate that yearning desire to be on the water.
What's been this experience like for you so far? I mean, first of all, getting the, from, like, what did it take to get the lease, first of all?
So it was about a 2.5 to 3 year process. You know, you're obviously having to go through the appropriate channels with the Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services. There are a lot of, you know, user group conflicts between fishermen, existing waterway uses. So siting is a concern for shellfish farmers. You know, you have to find that kind of perfect spot that's of the right depth, that's not impacting any existing resources, not in the middle of a channel. You have to worry about somebody coming and running through it. So siting was a concern, but once we got through that process, you know, we were kind of confronted with this harsh reality, like, okay, now we have a piece of paper that says we can do this, but we have no means, we don't have any money, we don't have a boat, we're just kind of, you know, making it up as we go along. And so at that point, I did what I think a lot of people do, is you find somebody smarter than you that can help out. And that person was my wife, because, you know, she helped us get a small business loan, and she deals with now more of that kind of administrative side of the business, and I can just focus on the farming.
And so you were able to get the small business loan and then figure out, like, what equipment you needed to get and the boat and everything?
Yeah, so it was just a product of lots of research and studying and you know, getting help from the growers were already doing this. You know, one thing that was really helpful for us was we spent a weekend last year at something called the Oyster South Symposium. It's a coalition nonprofit of growers throughout the Southeast region. And you know, the amount of support that we got from, you know, competitors, people that you're entering the business to directly compete with them, the amount of information and knowledge that people are willing to share, it says more. It says a lot about the aquaculture industry in itself, and that it is this industry where everybody is trying to help everybody else succeed because we recognize the merits of it.
And what do you hope is the future of, what do you hope that you're building here? Like, you're in kind of in the front lines of oysters in the Tampa Bay area. And so I'm wondering, what do you hope the future will look like here with oysters?
So, I know right now we're growing for, you know, food consumption. We're farming them for the restaurants, but in the future, I'd like to, you know, possibly look at restoration type work and see, you know, what we can do from the perspective of a farmer that grows oysters and how that, you know, fits into this larger picture of oyster restoration. I think that there's a lot of kind of misguided, happy-go-lucky feeling out there when somebody goes and plants a big bag of shells somewhere and they say, we created an oyster reef. It's like, no, you created a bag of shells that one day might be an oyster reef. And they, you know, these projects, they do work. They do become oyster reefs, but it's all about the siting of them, right? You have to have them in a place where natural larval recruitment can occur. So if we take what we learn with aquaculture and we can potentially parlay that into some type of a restoration effort, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
So it's not even just, so like, this is not even just about like food or an industry for growers. It's also an environmental question, because you also had mentioned in our previous conversation that there's a stigma of the environment, about the water quality in Tampa Bay. So what kind of stigma do you think you're facing, and also just kind of like showing a different side of the water quality here?
So I like to think about what aquaculture's role in water quality as it being part of the solution, right? When we look at Tampa Bay, we know that the historic levels of seagrass that we saw in the 50s, we've now surpassed that. We had some significant setbacks from, you know, unchecked sewage and dredging and filling and the creation of all of these artificial islands that we did. But all in all, the health of the bay has increased dramatically. Seagrasses are at a population or a coverage now than where they were prior to the 50s. So the bay has made huge strides in improvements in water quality. And I'm just excited to see what you know, where shellfish aquaculture falls into all that, because it is part of the solution, right? One mature oyster filters upwards of 50 gallons of water a day. So 2 acres here, if I had 500,000 oysters, that's 25 million gallons of water a day, 25 Olympic swimming pools.
And you mentioned that you might be planning on harvesting in April and May. I know you can't really tell how many you'll have, but like, what would be a good number for you? Like, what number would you be happy with in harvesting?
I would be happy if we brought like 30,000 oysters to market this summer. I think, you know, we have a lot of things to learn from a perspective of growing. We just want to, we want to give it a shot and just see if it's viable.
So in terms of like food and taste, so I know that sometimes these break up, and well, can you just describe like, how do you ever taste these, and what do they taste like?
Yeah. So, you know, I occasionally when I'm culling these apart, one of them will break every now and then, and I'll taste them, and they're very salty. Our growing area here, salinity is about 30 parts per thousand, 28 to 30. So, they have a really briny punch to them.
And how might that be different from other oysters? How do your oysters taste compared to what you've had in the past?
So, you know, they all oysters are different, right? Like every wine's different. A wine, the grape grows from a certain growing region. It has a certain characteristics of the soil. And so the same can be said of an oyster. You know, an oyster is a reflection of, immediate reflection of the water body that it was harvested from. So, yeah, they're salty here.
So how do you like to eat your oysters?
Just a little pinch of lime to kind of counterbalance it and right down the hatch. No filter.
And why is that?
You know, it's just the, I think it's the way that an oyster was meant to be consumed. Now, it doesn't mean I don't eat Rockefeller, I don't eat Tabasco from time to time, but my favorite way to eat oyster is just raw on the half shell.
And what is that, what kind of a flavor does that bring out? How would you describe that for somebody who's maybe never had it like that?
Well, when you first put it in your mouth, you know, you get a little bit of the liquor, the oyster's liquor with it, and you get this like punch of brine like right from the sea. And then as you chew and you bite into it, it releases like this sweet kind of texture of chewing the muscle, the adductor muscle. And you know, after you swallow and you finish, you know, the finishing note, it depends on the region where it was grown. You know, it could be fruity, nutty, buttery, minerally. The list of acronyms go on, and our adjectives go on and on.
And how do you think your aftertaste will be like, or what is your goal?
I think we're gonna have some grassy notes. You know, we're surrounded by a lot of grass flats here. Also, there are a lot of mangroves around, so we might have some of that kind of taste profile. It'll be interesting to see. Very rarely does food imitate art or become art just kind of inherently, and oysters are art. I mean, you have this very hardened exterior, and the inside is a soft, gooey, tasty thing, and You know, it's one of the only animals that we eat where we eat the entire animal. There's no waste product. I mean, the shell, obviously. But, yeah, it's just a very uniquely visceral experience that, that you don't find a whole lot in our food universe.
And do you feel like, so this is your art project?
Yeah, it is. I mean, there are a lot of different things that you can do to these oysters to make them grow differently. You know, like you can see on this one here, it has this new growth of the lip of the shell. And by taking it and putting it through the tumbler, you're crushing off that growing, that lip there, and you're encouraging them to grow thicker and deeper so you can, you know, kind of bend or mold the shell into growing something that's going to have more meat. It's going to be more desirable on a plate.
I don't know if you've thought about this, but do you hope that like your particular oysters will have a flavor so when somebody eats this, they might be like, oh, that's Brian's oyster.
Yeah. You know, I think that's part of the idea, right, is creating a brand. And, you know, the long stigma has been that Gulf oysters are of a certain variety. And what we've found through this revolution that's happening in the Southeast is that we have branded oysters coming out of Alabama. We have branded oysters coming out of the Panhandle that are... have names like Outlaw or Murder Point or Salty Bird that are on par with the Wellfleets and the, you know, Green Points and the ones that you're familiar with from the Northeast. So it just shows that it's all in the connotation of the word Gulf oyster, and it's not in what the actual oyster is, because if you focus on that, you can see that you can create a brand opportunity here as well.
So can you just describe for those who can't see or know what you're doing, like what is different about how you're harvesting these oysters, because you know they're floating, like just kind of summarize your process of growing an oyster. What does it take?
Yeah, so we purchase juvenile oysters from a hatchery. And they come to us about the size of a cornflake. And we stock them in floating bags out at our farm. And as they grow through the process, we move them up into larger and larger bags, or larger and larger whole-sized bags, so that they can have more access to nutrients and water coming through to them. And, you know, through this handling process, we culture a, you know, premium top-shelf product that has a more uniform size that restaurants look for, rather than something that you, you know, pluck off the bottom of the bay.
So they're floating around, and then you kind of pull them out, and they're like the size of a nickel right now. What do you hope the size to be when you...
So we're going to harvest them when they're 3-2-1, right? 3 inches long, 2 inches wide, and 1 inch deep. So we might have some that are getting close to that, but nothing quite that size yet.
Little guy.
So what are you about to do?
We're gonna taste the first oyster we've had out of this lease and just kind of see a little quality control check here and see if we can get them open. Peel off that top shell, cut across the top, a little bit of the adductor muscle right there. Bon appetit. Salty as can be.
That was reporter Jessica Mazaros with Brian Rossiger, owner of Lost Coast Oysters. We've got some pictures of Brian and the oysters on our website, thezestpodcast.com. And while you're there, check out our collection of Florida-centric recipes, like a whitefish ceviche with avocado, mango, and tomato. Thanks so much for listening. Subscribe to The Zest. It's free and it's easy. If you like what you hear, give us a rating on iTunes. I'm Robin Sussingham. Dalia Colon and I produce The Zest with help from Megan Trimble, Mark Hayes, and Craig George. The Zest is a production of WUSF Public Media.